Increasing the Yield for October 4th, 2021. This is episode number 23. And today I've got some positive vibes. It's a play. Yes, it's a play. The reason I say that is there's a service called vibes.audio. And what you do is a podcaster can submit the audio file of their podcast, and they will do an evaluation for quality. So, you know, this is what, episode 23, so I'm like, okay, let me just see what they gauge the quality of my podcast at. And the only reason I did is there's, if you follow podcasting at all, at least the industry of podcasting, there's a newsletter that goes out daily called Pod News. And he submitted his to test the site, and he got a 3.5. So I'm like, okay, let me see. He's a professional podcaster. He's been doing it for a long, long time. He reports on the industry. So I just want to see how I compare. And I beat him. I got a 4. 4 out of 5. I already forgot what their what their criteria was, because it really didn't matter. It was just for fun. So you can see my beautiful little V4.0 badge that I put in the show notes, because I'm a superior podcaster, apparently. 4.0. Oh, let's just get right into the news. What is happening today? Today, the markets are sort of, they just took a dive. When I was looking earlier, they were just kind of flat. Now things are down 1%. Dow is down 338. S&P's down 59.64, NASDAQ is down 314, the Russell 2000 down 23.64. So that means that my portfolios that were up earlier must all be trending down. Let's see. Right now, for the day, low yield is up 0.1%. I'm not doing too bad. Medium yield is up 0.4%. And my high yield's up 1%. So the current market that's down is not affecting what I'm invested in. So cheers for that. Hear, hear. All right. So there was a, over the weekend, really, there was a letter that went out to shareholders of Sixth Street Specialty Lending. And I probably, I'm always so unprepared for these things. Let's see, State Street Specialty Lending. Let's see, they're not, okay, no, this is where they are. They're in this other portfolio. So they are a business development company, and they provide secured loans, mezzanine debt, which I don't really understand, non-controlled structured equity and common equity with a focus on co-investments for organic growth, acquisitions, market or product expansion, restructuring initiatives, recapitalizations, and refinancing. They invest in businesses and business services, software and technology, healthcare, energy, consumer and retail, manufacturing, industrials, royalty-related businesses, education, specialty finance, and they principally finance middle market companies located in the United States. They're a small cap company with a market cap of $1.64 billion. Their current dividend yield is 7.27%. They are rated, their dividend safety is rated as borderline safe as 52, number 52, by Simply Safe Dividends. Their current stock price is $22.55. So they sent out a letter over the weekend, and the letter, the effective date is October 13th, 2021. And it states, in accordance with Section 23C1, under the Investment Company Act of 1940, we're writing to advise you that Sixth Street Capital Specialty Lending may repurchase shares of its common stock in the open market from time to time. We appreciate your continued support. And it's signed by Joshua Easterly, their CEO. I've never received a letter like this before, so I don't know how common it is. And I know it's fairly common for companies to do share buybacks, but I don't know. I guess it's to shore up the stock price, but I don't know how that's going to affect the dividends they pay out, and I guess I will find out over time. But I also have never seen a letter come out to shareholders that's predated. You know, I thought maybe it would have been dated the date that it came out, October 2nd, and saying as of October 13th, this is what we plan to do. But I don't know. I'd love to know if anybody's received a letter like this before that's predated, and how this would affect, or how it has affected them in the past. Capital gains, the new tax rates that are being bandied about in Washington. They talked about the capital gains in the Wall Street Journal. And I think accountants are going to have to get creative should the legislation pass, because people are going to try to find a workaround. And the marriage penalty is enormous. And, you know, I've never made even close to $400,000 a year. You know, I think at my peak, I took in close to $300,000 one year, but it was a single year, and the rest of that I was way below any of that. But, you know, President Biden's pledge of not raising taxes on anybody who makes below $400,000 is kind of a bait and switch, because if you're married, okay, now that's, so far it's true, the proposals are true for individuals that make below $400,000, but married couples, the threshold is $450,000, which means that effectively, if you have a two-income family and you're making over $450,000, which is possible depending on where in the country you live, and you could still live a very middle-class life with that income, $450,000 is the threshold. So that means that $25,000 is the actual threshold per individual for married couples. So it's not exactly true that he's not going to be raising taxes on people who make only under $400,000. The Wall Street Journal reported that they're proposing a 28.8% rate, and it would kick in at $400,000 of taxable income for single filers and $450,000 for married joint filers. That's around $50,000 below the thresholds for the current 23.8% top rate, which are $445,851 for single filers and $500,601 for married joint filers. This is the bad news for people with income in the $400,000 to $1 million range, even if it's from a one-time windfall like the sale of a home or business. So I'm wondering, is the marriage penalty currently that large? You know, I'm married, I filed jointly, but because our incomes don't rise to that level, you know, and since my early retirement, it's not even anywhere near that. I won't get anywhere near that. I'm just wondering, was it always that big? Because that's egregious. Sorry, but it's egregious to me. I rebalanced my low yield portfolio to better balance out the sectors that I'm invested in. So I did this at the end of last week, and I did create a blog post specifically for this so you can see exactly what I did. So I said it's time for me to rebalance. Both the low yield and medium yield portfolios are too heavily weighted in the financial sector. They are 26% and 28% respectively in the financial sector, and that leaves me too exposed. So I decided to tweak things a little bit by selling off the profits of four holdings in my low-yield portfolio. The money's going to go into consumer staples, or actually did go into consumer staples and industrial sectors. So I sold off about 104.5 shares of Bank OZK, sorry. I sold 24.743 shares of Cullen Frost. I sold 46.065 shares of Franklin Resources and 37.5 shares of Arrow Financial. And what I bought is I bought 27, almost 28 shares of JM Smucker. I bought 9.751 shares of Lockheed Martin and 62.52 shares of Unilever. And, you know, what I tend to do is I took the money from the sale of the four stocks that I sold, and I just spread it equally amongst the three stocks that I bought. So I didn't buy more of one, less of the other, you know, trying to bet on which one is going to, stock price is going to gain more than the other. Instead, I just do an equal distribution across all of them to try to just balance things out. And that's generally what I do when I buy a bunch of stocks. You know, I don't try to somehow play the market where I try to, you know, have a crystal ball to tell me which one's going to go up more than another. So after this rebalance, the financial sector make up more than, let's see, now makes up 23% of the low yield portfolio, and it's under my target of 25% max in any sector. I'd originally planned that for my goal is not to have too much weighted in any sector, and I kind of set that artificially at 25%. Industrials sector increased to 17%, and consumer staples increased to 16%. So it makes me feel a little bit more comfortable that I'm not so exposed to one part of the market. And not much changed in the yield percentage, so that kind of evens itself out. So I'm not losing anything of income. And the dividend growth percentage also didn't change all that much. Things went a little bit higher, but not much. So the safety of my dividends, though, increased because now I've got improved diversification and slightly better safety ratings in a couple of the new holdings. So hopefully that works out. You can watch all of that on the blog, and I've updated the portfolio section as well, so it all should be sitting there for your perusal. Let's see, Hoag LNG Partners, they reached the settlement with lenders to defer maturity date of the commercial tranche of its PGN FSRU Lampung debt facility. It's a mouthful. I'm not exactly sure what all of that means, and I'm not exactly sure still how this is going to affect me, but I'm still riding this out. The stock for that one's still down quite a bit. It's down to like $4 or something a share, but you know, I've already crossed that bridge, and so I'm just going to ride that out and not panic about it. What they said is that the lenders have agreed to defer the maturity date of the commercial tranche from September 29th to January 14th, 2022, subject to commitment letters and a term sheet for a refinancing of the commercial tranche being in place by December 29th, 2021. The maturity date will automatically be further deferred to March 29th, 2022. The commercial tranche will continue to be amortized, at its current rate, and there will be a gradual step up in the interest margin with up to 235 basis points increase. As a condition for the deferred maturity date, no shareholder loans may be repaid and no dividends may be paid to the partnership by the subsidiary borrowing under the Lampung facility, PT Hoag LNG Lampung. As a consequence, no cash flow from the PNG FSRU Lampung will be available for the partnership prior to the deferred maturity date. This limitation does not prohibit the partnership from paying the current distributions to preferred and common unit holders. And that is what I am. I believe I am a common unit holder, but right now their dividend yield is so tiny it doesn't really matter. So we'll see where that takes us. Part of funding some of my rebalance came from a profit taking on Albemarle. I talked about this before, and I purchased the holdings I have in Albemarle on August 28th, 2019, and I bought in at $59.06 a share. The stock price since then shot up 282%. So, and in looking at it, it appears to me that the stock may now be pretty well overvalued, and I don't know if it, you know, if it's going to continue to rise. If you look at the chart shows a pretty rapid rise for that stock, and their current dividend yield is only 0.72%. So it's kind of like having your money in a money market or a savings account. So what I did was I reduced my holdings in the stock back to my original investment of $5,000, and I took the profits and I spread them out over three different companies that are also in the materials sector. The reason I'm keeping the money inside the materials sector is that only 7% of my low yield portfolio is in that sector. It's already weighted a little heavy in financials, which I covered already. So the stocks that I purchased with the profits from Albemarle are Air Products and Chemicals, Cabot Corporation, and New Market Corporation. And I promise to, I'll give a little more detail on what I purchased and what those companies are at a later date. So let's see, the update on the portfolio, or on the portfolios rather. For last week, the low yield portfolio was up, down 0.88%. For the month, it was down 4.16%. Not a good month. And since, for the year, it's still up 13.18%. And since inception, it is up 28.1%. Medium yield portfolio for the week was down 0.23%, down for the month, 3.88%, and up for the year, 8.9%. Since inception, that portfolio is still up 4.8%. My high yield portfolio was up 1.3% for the week, up 0.79%, and down for the year, 7.02% so far. Since inception, it is down 7.9%. So actually, the high yield portfolio just kind of did the opposite of what the other two portfolios did last week, being up 1.3%, while the other two were down roughly a little over 1%. Dividends received for the week, I had a pretty good list. MDU Resources, I received $61.41, Coca-Cola, $67.62, Eastman Chemical, $62.79, Genuine Parts Company, $65.20, Community Trust Bank, $81.20, PIMCO Income Fund, $168.56, Public Storage, $60 even, Eversource Energy, $62.06, Pepsi paid $66.65, Ares Capital paid $204.59. T. Rowe Price paid $64.80. Arrow Financial paid $27.22. And Oak Tree Specialty Lending paid $416.01. They are the breadwinner for the week. Dividend events. Fortis, they announced their next dividend of 53.5 cents per Canadian cents per share, a 5.9% increase over the company's previous payout. And Target and AT&T both are in line with their previous payout, Target at 90 cents per share and AT&T at 52 cents per share. This is a Podcasting 2.0 compatible podcast. If you got anything out of this or you're getting anything out of the website, please feel free to use one of the new podcast apps at newpodcastapps.com. You can stream Bitcoin to me from the new apps that are value-for-value enabled. You can also go to the website, chasingtheyield.com, and click on the red donate button if you feel like sending a few bucks my way. Let's see, what else here? We got, this is a value-for-value enabled podcast, and if you're listening on any of those podcast apps, you can send some Satoshis this way, and feel free to boost. Boost! Nobody knows what Boost is. They're called Boostagrams. And with Boostagrams, you can send some Bitcoin, fractions of Bitcoin, rather. And along with that, you can send a message. So send me a message. I thought I turned off notifications. I guess not. Hold on one second. Got to take a pause. So hold on. All right. So I don't remember where I was, but that's okay because I was near the end anyway. So let me put my glasses back on. And I will just bring this to a close. So let's see. Okay. ChasingTheYield.com and myself, Kevin Bay. Not a registered investment advisor, broker, or dealer. I may have positions in any financial instrument, product, or company mentioned on chasingtheyield.com or on the podcast. Information provided by the website or the podcast is provided for information and entertainment purposes only, not intended as advice or a recommendation or an offer or solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security or financial instrument. All opinions are based upon sources believed to be accurate and are provided in good faith. No warranty, representation, or guarantee expressed or implied is made as to the accuracy of the information contained herein. Please contact an investment professional if you have any questions regarding an investment. If you want to contact me, you can go to the website, and there are links for Facebook and Twitter. You can also send me an email at mail@chasingtheyield.com. And that's about it for this week, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.